theme for this year is being steadfast, immovable, always abounding, or as the International Standard Translation says it, excelling in the work of the Lord. That's what we're all about, doing what God wants us to do. In 2 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, and beginning there at verse 1, the apostle writes to the church at Corinth, and he says, as touching the ministering to the saints, it's superfluous for me to write to you. I love that word, superfluous. Took me a long time to learn how to say that word. It's kind of like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It's super. I don't even need to write to you. I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to those that are in Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has provoked very many. And that's the King James translation of 2 Corinthians 9. And the apostle says, their zeal in Achaia has provoked a lot of people to do the ministering to the saints. In Hebrews, the 10th chapter, beginning at verse 24, he says, let us consider one another to provoke to love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, so much the more as you see the day approaching. Again, that's the King James translation. How are we going to do that? How are we going to provoke one another to good works? Well, I had some ideas. They're probably not good ideas. We could put this sign on the door when you come in. The beatings will continue until morale improves. Maybe we don't want to put the sign on the door because people would see that. So we could make it more personal. We could give all of the members here a commemorative coffee mug. Some people can relate to that coffee mug. Well, this idea that we're going to provoke, it's an interesting idea. And this morning, I'm going to tell you some things about this idea of provoking. I wish that I could tell you that I understand everything that there is to understand about this word provoke, but I don't. Generally speaking, as I try to understand a concept biblically, I look for a place where the same words are used. And the same word that's used here in 1 Corinthians and in Hebrews only appears here. Now, the English translation, provoke, appears in a lot of different places. In fact, there are 11 of them. But the problem is that it's not the same word in the original that the apostles wrote. It's the same, English word provoke. But this is where we sometimes get in trouble, because we look up things in the English and we forget that the original writers had something perhaps a little bit different in mind than what we understand from the English. It's used in Luke, the 11th chapter, where he says that the Pharisees came to Jesus and they were trying to get him to say something so that they could trap him. You've seen that over and over again. Well, in Luke, the 11th chapter at verse 52, it says that they were trying to provoke him. That's a different word than is used over here in the texts that we looked at this morning. In Romans, the 10th chapter, And then again, in a couple of other places in Romans and in 1 Corinthians, another word is used. And I'm sorry that when I imported my slides this morning into the presentation, they got goofed up a little bit. That slide looked a whole lot better before I imported it into this presentation. But in Romans, the 11th chapter, or the 10th chapter, he talks about how the Israelites tried to provoke God by the things that they did. And Lenny talked about that a little bit this morning. Romans, the 11th chapter, he says that the Jews rejecting God would provoke the Gentiles to jealousy. It would cause the Gentiles to come in. Romans, the 11th chapter, verse 14, he says, I would suggest to God that I would die if that would be willing, if that would be enough to provoke some of my brethren. 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, and verse 22. And now all of these are the same word. He says, do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he is? A little bit different. It's another word in 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter at verse 5. This is a passage that we're all familiar with. It's this famous passage about love. And he says, love is not easily provoked. Different word. Little bit different shade of meaning. Ephesians, the 6th chapter. Passage again, we're reasonably familiar with. You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Different word. Then Colossians, which is a restatement of Ephesians. And it seems to me like I ought to have this nailed down because it's a restatement, but it's a different word. He says, fathers, provoke not your children. And the King James translation adds to anger, or excuse me, not the King James, but the American Standard adds to anger. That word's not in Colossians, but it's a different word. Same English word, just keeps on popping up with these different Greek words. Hebrews, the 3rd chapter. Some, when they heard, provoked, but not all that came out of Egypt by Moses. So some people provoked God. Some didn't. Some listened. Acts, the 4th chapter. Again, here it is. Different word. Talks about Barnabas, the son of consolation, a Levite of the country of Cyprus, having land and sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. So now what do we learn? Well, let's see if we can't understand something about this by looking at some different translations. That's a second approach that I often use. I look at different places where the same language is used, and then I look at different translations. I look at different ways that people have translated this. The International Standard Version says it this way in 2 Corinthians 9. He says, I do not need to write to you any further about the ministry to the saints. I know how willing you are. I boast about you to the people of Macedonia, saying that Achaia has been ready since last year, and your enthusiasm has stimulated most of them. That helps me. Hebrews, the 10th chapter. Here's this other passage. It's the same word in the original language here. It's translated a little bit differently, but they say it this way. Let us continue to consider how to motivate one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together is the habit of some, but encouraging one another even more as you see the day of the Lord coming near. Well, there's the lexical definitions for this idea of provoking. You can see that Thayer and Strong define it pretty much in the same way. It is an incitement to do good or dispute. That's interesting. It's a contention. It's to provoke unto. It's an inciting or an incitement. Sometimes it's an irritation. When I lived in Alaska, I used to fish for salmon. I found out right after I moved there that salmon stop eating when they come into fresh water. They're bent on one thing, swimming upstream and reproducing, and then they're going to die. They stop eating when they come into fresh water. You can't tempt them with food. So what you do is you tie the biggest, gaudiest, ugliest kind of lure that you can find onto your line, and then you throw it right in front of their nose, and it makes them mad. That's the word provoke. Well, instead of trying to define it, let's talk about some of the distinctive features of trying to motivate each other. This is what we want to do. Most of the time, motivating is based on imitation. The more the model resembles me, the more likely I am to be motivated. Trust me, there are some people that I see on TV that don't motivate me at all because I know that they're not anything like me. I'm never going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. When I see his physique on TV, I am not motivated to try. But the more the model looks like me, the better I try to be like the model. And I found it interesting that contemporary models are better than models from the distant past. Remember when Paul was writing to the Corinthians and he talked about how their behavior had motivated those in Macedonia? Why didn't he instead go all the way back to Barnabas? We're familiar with Barnabas. Acts, the fourth chapter, had land, sold it, brought the amount of the land or the price of the land, laid it at the apostles' feet, and good work was done. Why didn't he use Barnabas, and instead, when he's trying to encourage the people of Macedonia, does he talk about Corinth? Contemporaries. They weren't contemporary with Barnabas. I'm not, frankly, contemporary with Moses. Moses is indeed some sense a model for me, but I'm not motivated by Moses. You know who motivates me? Ron's sister. She's just like me. She lives in the same world that I live in. She did a good work. Why is it that we're almost afraid to talk about contemporary models? We're fine talking about how the Apostle Paul motivates. We're fine talking about how Barnabas motivates. We're fine talking about how the Corinthians motivated. But what we know is that contemporary models are more effective, but we don't talk about them. They go unnoticed. there are a lot of different places where we're encouraged to be like our model, to be like our mentor. And I've just mentioned some of them here. We'll not take the time to read them this morning. They're passages that we're familiar with. And then there's something else that I know about motivating. We're just not very motivating when we don't do it first. You motivate one another best when you're not saying, do as I say, but you're saying, do as I do. Come with me. Matthew, the 23rd chapter. Jesus talked about the Pharisees. He said, you're intimately familiar with the Pharisees. He says, do what they instruct you. What they instruct you to do is right, but they say and they do not do. Don't be like them. If you want to motivate, you have to do. If you're not doing it, you're not motivating. You can scream at the top of your lungs. The beatings will continue until morale improves. But if you are not doing what you're trying to get people to do, you're not going to get anybody to follow you. Motivating is best accomplished when we first consider one another. We have to know each other. West, who wrote the book that he wrote that I quote this from, is not nearly as familiar with his word studies are. But he says this translation would be appropriate in this place. He says, let us constantly be giving careful attention to one another for the purpose of stimulating one another to love and good works. And we really do have to consider one another. If we're not considering one another, we're missing the point of Hebrews, the 10th chapter, because that's the way Hebrews, the 10th chapter begins. Consider one another. If that's not what we're doing, we're not going to be successful. And the Apostle Paul gives the reason for that, of course, in Romans, the 12th chapter. At verse 5, he says, we being many are one body in Christ. How many of you ever look at your feet? Sometimes we do. Sometimes we do, and I'll tell you, sometimes we should do it more often than we think about. Especially if you're diabetic or you have some problem that's like that. You have to examine yourself. You have to know the body. And we're not going to motivate unless we know each other. That's why we want to come together like this. It's a time for us to get to know each other. Now, of course, we come together to worship God. We also come together to encourage one another, to provoke one another. And then the last thing, motivation is almost always dependent upon the goal. Never forget that the motivating that we do together is to accomplish the goal of love and good works. God saved us for this purpose. Ephesians, the second chapter at verse 10. God did not save us simply so that we could say, I'm a Christian. God saved us so we can do good works. And I feel that sometimes we've lost sight of this. I know I have. sometimes we try to motivate people to come to church. I quit motivating for the purpose of getting people to do good works. And I start trying to motivate people to come to church. I think I missed it. Now, there's some practical features that are associated with motivating. Number one, as you might suggest, as you might have concluded already, is do good works. Other people will see you and they will be motivated by the works that you do. Do good works. Second thing, when you do good works, take somebody with you. When you go and you visit with Pat, find somebody to take with you to do that. You're motivating. That's provoking one another to love and good works. That's what we want to do. Third thing, we need to decide right here and right now that no one will ever come into our assembly to whom no one pays attention. Everyone who comes into the assembly will be greeted. They will be attended to. And I'm not talking about just saying, hi, how are you? That's not really paying attention to each other. But I'm talking about really paying careful attention, real attention to everyone that comes into our assembly. We're gonna do our very best this year to motivate, to love, and to good works. That's what we're here for. And we're going to ask you a simple question in Ted's song. Who's ready to follow Jesus? We're not asking that in an academic sense. We're asking that in a very real sense. Who is ready to stand up today and say, I want to follow Jesus. I want to do good works. Because that's what Jesus did. Now, you put him on, make him your king in baptism. That's not the end. That's just the beginning. We'll help you get started. And we'll help you to do good works.